coding properly, explained Edgar. And that can happen for any number of reasons, including damage to the file or a problem with your processor. And if you know what you're doing, you can disable your computer's ability to read the code properly. That's what I just did. But it's also something else. What?
A code.
You mean they hide the code in the gibberish? Said Sean. Gold in the trash is a phrase we use in the cybersecurity field, noted Edgar. It's actually pretty cool because everyone's had that happen to them. It's just a software glitch. You don't think it's anything more than that.
But you obviously saw there was more to it.
Well, with the wall, you pretty much see everything, said Edgar modestly. So, what does this code say? Asked Sean. It's a communication to an unknown party, but one I strongly suspect is the same one on the IP trail from the blogger, because the exact same barriers have been set up to block access to the source at the other end. But what does it say? Persisted Sean. It's a series of numbers, he replied. Numbers meaning what? If I had to guess, it's satellite coordinates, because I've seen them before, said Edgar. I haven't fully deciphered the message, so I don't know the location of the satellite yet, if that's what it is. Sean looked upward. A bird in the sky? What does that have to do with anything?
Eyes in the heavens,
said Michelle. She looked thoughtful as she took a sip of coffee.
How much does a sky bird cost?
It could be a lot, said Edgar. You have to build it first, and that's not cheap. Then you have to get it up there, and that's not cheap either. Most people with such a need just rent space on an existing platform.
You can do that? Rent space on a satellite just like you would an apartment?
Edgar nodded as he kept clicking keys. Done all the time. There are businesses devoted to it. Some of the satellites the government uses are rented from commercial companies. The government, said Sean. But how do you maintain security? There are a number of ways. Sometimes you rent the whole satellite. Must really be big bucks involved, said Sean.
Like €1 billion?
The comment drew a sharp glance from him. Is that what you're thinking? Someone bought a satellite? Why? Michelle took another sip of coffee.
I don't know, but if sats are expensive, €1 billion would certainly come in handy.
Yes, they would, added Edgar. Sean said, Edgar, what would it cost to buy or rent a satellite? Edgar used his left hand to start clicking keys on another keyboard, with the results popping up on another screen. All the while, his right hand clicked away on the first keyboard. His gaze darted between the two screens. A lot depends on the size and reach of the satellite, explained Edgar. Building one can cost from $500 million up to $2 billion. They can be as small as half a ton, all the way up to the size of a truck weighing a couple of tons. But there are other varieties. I call them burners.
Why is that?
You can build them on the cheap, say $1 million or less. Get them up to position on a rented rocket along with other payload. You lease the platform out to as many paying customers as you can get, sometimes for a few $100 a week to get your investment back, plus a decent profit. And a couple of years later, the bird drifts back to Earth and burns up in the atmosphere, hence the term burner.
But these cheaper satellites, they wouldn't have the reach of the more expensive ones.
Of course not. Even in space, you get what you pay for, gravity not included. Edgar smiled and looked at Sean. That was a joke. Yeah, I got it. So, how many satellites are in the sky? Edgar clicked more keys. Over 1,000. Most are owned and operated by the U.S., Russia, and China, divided among civil, commercial, government, and military applications. But lots of countries own all or pieces of satellites. Most commercial satellites are in what is called geosynchronous orbit, as opposed to low Earth orbit, where governments have the most platforms.
And satellites are used principally for...
communications, answered Edgar promptly. Moving information around the world at speed, phone service, navigation, computer networks, whatever. The wall depends on them, which means so do I. Sean looked off, thinking. If Alan Grant bought or rented his satellite, what would be his reason?
Spying?
Sean looked doubtful. For whom? And why the billion-euro theft? Edgar said you could rent space on a satellite for a lot less than that, and Grant has to be the source for the blog. The administration is taking incredible heat over it. You saw how worried President Cole looked. And if this whole thing is payback for what happened to Grant's father during Iran-Contra, then the satellite must figure into the plan the man has. Sean put down his coffee cup and pointed at the screen. Edgar, can you find a list of commercial satellite operators?
Yes.
Can you find out who might have rented space on one of them in, say, the last few weeks or so?
I can try.
Okay, replied Sean, picking up his coffee cup again. Michelle said,
What are you thinking?
Communication. That's what satellites are for. What I'm thinking is Grant is into communicating, running the show. He fed George Carlton all the secrets about the debacle in Afghanistan. Michelle nodded, a glimmer of understanding coming into her features.
You think he's using the satellite for communicating something else?
Yeah, I do. I just don't know what. And it might not simply be information. He looked at Edgar. Using a satellite, you can control things on the ground, right?
Yes. The government uses it to operate the power grid, the nuclear arsenal, command and control functions. Lots of things we all depend on.
Michelle interjected.
You think he's trying to take over the U.S. nuclear arsenal?
No. Those would be on government birds and protected as well as anything can be. Plus, you have manual safeguards for those suckers back on the ground.
Well, what then, Sean?
I don't know, he said, visibly frustrated. But whatever it is, I know it's going to be pretty damn significant.
While Edgar's working on all this, what do we do?
We have to talk to Wingo. Tell him what's happened.
Like you said, he might go off the deep end.
It's all in how we phrase it, Michelle. It'll take some diplomacy.
So you want me to talk to him?
No.
Why not?
Don't take this the wrong way, but you're about as diplomatic as the punk running North Korea.
Maybe so, but I'm also a lot tougher.
Chapter 71. Alan Grant was not pleased by the day's developments. Sean King had been at Heron Air Service, but had gotten away yet again. The home of Trevor Jenkins had been broken into, and while nothing appeared to be missing, he couldn't be sure of that. He picked up the burn phone and made the call using an electronic filter to disguise his voice. Sam Wingo answered on the first ring. Yes?
We have a problem, Wingo.
What is that?
Two problems, actually. King and Maxwell.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I asked you to stand down.
I am standing down. I haven't moved since you called me last time.
But your friends have.
They are not my friends.
Do you want me to send a body part from your son to get my point across?
Listen, please. Just don't hurt him.
I know that you're working with King and Maxwell, so don't try to bullshit me. And if you think I'm going to stand by and do nothing while they seek to find me, then you made an egregious miscalculation.
What do you want me to do?
Put them out of commission.
How?
I'll leave it to your imagination. You can kill them if you want. I don't really care. If I find them interfering one more time, Tyler gets delivered to you in a body bag. Are we clear?
Yes, Wingo replied in a hushed voice. Sean and Michelle pulled into the parking lot and climbed out of the car. Sean said, I'm really not sure how to approach Sam on this.
Don't ask me. I'm down there with the punk from Pyongyang on the diplomacy scale.
Look, I didn't mean it exactly like that.
You meant it exactly like that.
Sean knocked on Wingo's motel room door. Sam, it's us. Come on in, the door's unlocked, Wingo called out. They opened the door and walked in. Michelle closed it behind them. When she turned back around, she saw that Sean had his hands in the air. She looked across the room. Wingo was standing there, his gun pointed at them.
Is there a problem?
Asked Sean. I got a call. You two have been snooping around. They said if you keep it up, Tyler comes back in a body bag. Sean eyed the gun. Sam, we told you what we were going to do. We agreed that was the best plan to get them back safely.
No, you agreed that was the best way. I didn't really have a say. He flicked the gun. Now I do.
You're playing right into their hands, Sam. If we all stand down, Tyler is never coming back.
Let me tell you what I do know. If we don't stop, he's dead. If we do stand down, he might have a chance.
You don't really believe that, said Sean.
Don't tell me what I believe or don't believe, barked Wingo. I am not going to let you give my son a death sentence.
You already have, Sam, by doing what you're doing.
We have leads, added Sean. Good ones. We're getting closer.
You can say whatever you want to say. I have to think of my son.
And you don't think we are? Said Sean. The only reason we took this case was because of your son.
Wingo glanced down for a moment. Look, I'm not blaming you, okay? I know you're trying to help. It's just that I'm caught between a rock and a hard place.
Michelle said,
Well, you made that situation, not us, and certainly not Tyler. It was your choice to take this mission.
Wingo's features hardened. You think I don't know that? I've regretted that decision from the instant I made it.
Sean sat on the edge of the bed.
So the answer is to just sit here and wait and hope these people who have already killed will let your son free?
Is that your strategy?
Wingo sat down heavily in a chair against the wall, but kept his gun on them.
What choice do I really have?
What say we turn the tables on them?
How?
We're sure Alan Grant is connected to this.
Okay, how does that help?
He has a family too.
So?
Sean stared at him.
You've been pushed against the wall. You have no other way out. You're a desperate man.
I'm not following you.
He's threatened to kill your son.
Yeah, he has, snapped Wingo. But what do I do about it?
Sean said, I'm tired of always reacting to these assholes. Let's go on the offensive.
How?
Sam can threaten to kill Grant's family.
Michelle froze. Wingo looked confused.
He'll never believe that I would do that.
Are you desperate?
Of course I am.
Then desperate times call for desperate measures.
Even if I were inclined, how would I communicate with him?
Sean pointed to Wingo's phone. With that.
Sean, we're not harming Grant's kids.
Of course not. I said threaten, that's all.
But...
Let's send the threat, interrupted Sean, and see what happens.
Michelle got an understanding look on her face. She glanced at Wingo, who sat there still looking confused. But finally, he put his gun away and held up his phone.
Tell me how to do this.
First, we have to go somewhere, replied Sean.
Chapter 72. Alan Grant was staring at a computer screen inside the vault at the radio station when the burn phone in his pocket vibrated. He slid it out, glanced at it, then his gaze became riveted to it. Child for a child. You take mine, I take yours. And unlike me, you have three to choose from. Grant leapt up so quickly he banged his knee against the desk edge. Limping slightly, he left the radio station and hurried to his car. He phoned home while he drove. There was no answer. He tried his wife's cell phone. There was still no answer. He drove fast, but it still took more than 2 hours before he pulled into his driveway and jumped out of the car. He was heading to the house when he saw them. His wife had the two youngest kids and their black lab. The youngest child was in his stroller. His 5-year-old daughter was helping to push it. They had obviously been for a walk. When she saw her husband, Leslie Grant looked surprised.
Alan, what are you doing home?
She saw the concern on his face.
Is everything okay, honey?
Where's Danny? He asked, referring to their oldest child. She looked confused.
He's still in school. The bus will drop him off this afternoon.
She drew closer as their daughter ran forward to her dad. Grant rubbed his face and forced a smile as he picked her up. Leslie drew next to him. Grant patted the lab and tried to look unconcerned.
Alan, is everything okay?
She said in a low voice.
Daddy's okay,
said their daughter, whose name was Margaret, but who went by Maggie after her grandmother. She cupped her dad's face in her hands.
Daddy's okay.
Daddy is very okay, said Grant, wrapping an arm around his wife as he held Maggie with the other. Look, he said, how about I take you three out to lunch? Sound good?
You'll have to give me a few minutes to put myself together,
said Leslie. Okay, I've got some stuff to get from the car. Say 20 minutes?
Fine.
She took the kids and the dog into the house, but shot a nervous glance back at her husband before shutting the door. Grant was standing next to his car when he felt the burn phone vibrate. He looked at the text that had just appeared there. Nice-looking family, Alan. Let's keep it that way. Don't worry. I won't hurt the pooch. Grant spun around in all directions, attempting to get eyes on the text sender, but he saw no one. He put the phone away. This complicated things. They had a stalemate on the kids, but that had no impact on his overall plan. All elements were in place, and even if Wingo had managed somehow to trace things back to him, he had no proof of anything that could stick. Grant could pull the trigger, and there would be no evidence that he had done anything illegal. After it was all over, he would figure out what to do about Wingo and King and Maxwell. Far down the block, behind a line of parked cars, Michelle lowered her binoculars and glanced over at Sean, who sat in the driver's seat. Wingo was in the back seat with optics on Grant as well.
You were right, Sean. That really flushed him out, like a bird dog into the thicket and the quail spilling out.
What I was hoping for, said Sean with a pleased look.
You think he's standing down on this?
He's got a family just like me, said Wingo. He doesn't want anything to happen to them.
That I get.
But I doubt he's standing down on his overall plan, noted Sean. That's what you mean, right? Michelle nodded.
So that means the hostage situation will have no impact on what he wants to do.
Satellite, missing money, government conspiracy, leaks, said Sean.
And the motive being his mother's and father's suicide after Iran-Contra. Seems like a lot.
But there's zip there we can take to the FBI, said Sean. Littlefield will look at us like we're nuts. Or worse, he'll make some inquiries and maybe blow everything up. This satellite, said Wingo. You trying to get a fix on it? Trying. We're also trying to find the blogger's source. But something tells me we're staring right at his house. So that part is solved.
But if Edgar can establish a link between Grant and George Carlton, that is evidence.
Sean said, evidence of a leak, not evidence of a major crime. And unless it can be proven that Grant stole classified information, his free speech rights might bar any prosecution. So what do we do? Asked Wingo. We have to find out what the satellite is for. If we can do that, we might just be able to jump a few spaces and take his king.
You're mixing checkers and chess,
observed Michelle. Yes, I am, because I'm not sure what game Grant is playing. What can we do? Asked Wingo. Sean thought for a moment. Satellite. Michelle looked at him quizzically.
Yeah, we already covered that point.
No, I'm not talking about that satellite. I'm talking about another one. She touched his forehead.
Do you have a fever?
I wonder where Grant just came in from. It wasn't his office downtown. It took him well over 2 hours after we sent the text for him to get here. This time of day, the trip out of D.C. would take him 30 minutes tops.
That's true,
said Michelle, looking thoughtful.
Well, he's driving a pretty new Mercedes. GPS comes standard on those models.
And GPS is controlled by satellite, remarked Sean.
So how can we possibly get a satellite to follow his...
Michelle stopped herself when Sean gave her a knowing look.
Edgar.
What is this Edgar you keep mentioning? Asked Wingo. Is it an acronym for a computer system or something? Or something, replied Sean. Chapter 73. They dropped Wingo off at the motel and then drove out to Edgar's farmhouse to meet with him. After coming to understand what they wanted, Edgar agreed to help.
You really should be on our payroll, Edgar,
Michelle joked.
I think we're using you more than the U.S. government. What a team we'd make.
Edgar looked at her strangely. How much do you pay? Sean interjected. I doubt we could match what you're making. We don't have Uncle Sam's pocketbook.
Or his debt, thankfully.
What benefits do you offer? Asked Edgar. I get 4 weeks paid vacation and a 401k plan, and catered breakfast and lunch, and a rental apartment in the city with nice views. I think Michelle was just making a joke, Edgar, added Sean, who looked perplexed. However, Edgar didn't appear to be listening to him. I'll think about it, said Edgar, while Sean gave Michelle an anxious look. What just happened? He mumbled to her.
I'm not sure,
she whispered back. He said in a normal voice, So you think you can do it, Edgar? This tracking thing? You gave me the license plate number of Grant's vehicle. From that, I can easily get the VIN. And from there, lots of things open up. His fingers were flying over the multiple keyboards.
Just curious. You ever get repetitive motion injuries?
Asked Michelle as she watched him work away. No, said Edgar. How long will it take to track him via the GPS? Asked Sean. Not long, replied Edgar. I'll contact you when I'm done. They walked back to their car and drove off. Michelle said,
I think that he thinks we offered him a job.
You mean he thinks you offered him a job?
I wasn't being serious, and we can't afford him.
I know that, said Sean. But we can't just keep asking the guy to do all this stuff for us for free. He paused and added with a tinge of hope. Can we?
No, we can't.
Sean turned the radio on and they caught the top of the hour news feed. It was dominated by the growing scandal surrounding the Cole administration. The political opposition in the Congress was strenuously calling for investigative hearings. Subpoenas were already being drawn up. One congressman had even mentioned impeachment as a possibility. The government of Iran was also rattling the sabers and denouncing the U.S. actions, and America's allies were distancing themselves from the situation. Cole's spokesperson was offering the standard spin, and all of it seemed weak and evasive.
Pretty bleak,
commented Michelle. Well, what they did was pretty stupid, said Sean. You can't buy a democracy, even with €1 billion.
Very eloquent of you.
I have my moments.
So what now, just twiddle our thumbs waiting for Edgar to do his thing?
No, we're going to split up.
Where are you going?
I'm going to babysit Wingo, so he doesn't do something stupid.
And me?
Can you go by the hospital and check on Dana for me? Michelle looked slightly panicked.
Me? Sean? They won't let me see her.
They will if she wants them to.
But why not you?
Can you just do it for me, Michelle? She started to protest again, but when she saw the look on his face, she said,
Sure, I'll go. just drop me at my truck. But if something goes down, you call me, okay?
You got it. And Michelle, thanks.
You're welcome.
An hour later, Michelle walked into the hospital and made her way to the ICU. She was dreading running into Curtis Brown. She discovered, however, that the general was not at the hospital. A nurse informed Michelle that he had left earlier but planned to be back soon. The nurse's station buzzed Dana's room, and she agreed to see Michelle. The nurse admonished,
"You can't stay long. She needs her rest."
"Absolutely,"
said Michelle. She entered Dana's room and took a moment to look around at the array of tubes and machines hooked up to her, helping her to get better. It had not been that long ago that Michelle had been in a hospital bed with nearly the identical medical equipment hooked up to her as she fought for her life. She drew up a chair and sat down next to the bed. Dana looked over at her. Her coloring was better today, Michelle thought, even if she still looked very weak.
"Sean's not with you?"
she said.
"Not right now. I know he'll be coming by to see you later."
Dana slowly nodded, but looked disappointed all the same.
"I understand the general was here earlier."
Dana tried to sit up a bit, but Michelle put a restraining hand on her shoulder.
"I'll raise the bed instead, okay?"
Michelle hit the lift control, and Dana's torso rose a few inches.
"Curtis has been great through this,"
said Dana.
"I'm sure he has, but so have you."
Michelle gave her a reassuring squeeze on her arm.
"Have you found out anything about all this?"
"Still trying, but we're getting there."
"Sean will get there, I'm sure of it."
"You seem to have a good relationship with your ex,"
said Michelle, with just the tiniest of bites to her words.
"Actually, we had no relationship at all. Not until he contacted me. I hadn't heard from him since the divorce."
Michelle started to say something else and then caught herself. She glanced at the monitors and the drip lines and decided not to push it. The woman was still in precarious shape.
"You can ask what you want to ask, Michelle."
She glanced over to see Dana's gaze on her.
"He's a good man, and I screwed up big time in letting him get away." "So, regrets?"
"I'd prefer not to use that word. I have Curtis. I have to look forward, not back."
There was a minute of silence until Dana said,
"Are you two more than just business partners?"
"Does it matter to you?"
"Could you hand me that cup of water, please?"
Michelle held the cup for her while Dana sipped on the straw. She sat back and took a few deep breaths. One of the monitors started alarming, and Michelle quickly stood.
"Should I get a nurse?" "No, that thing's been chiming the last 2 days. They have the parameter set too low, or so they told me. No one's been in to adjust it yet."
Michelle sat back down. Dana stared at her wrist, where an IV line was inserted.
"I guess it does matter to me, Michelle, but probably not for the reason you think."
She eased her head to the right and looked at her.
"I'm very happy with Curtis. I would like Sean to be happy, too."
"He is happy."
"Being happy alone and being happy with someone are two different things. So are you more than business partners?"
"I don't know what we are, Dana."
"Is that your version of the facts or Sean's?"
Michelle scowled.
"Look, I know you've been shot and everything, but this isn't really your business, is it?"
"Did Sean tell you why we split up?"
"No, not really."
"Entirely my fault."
"Being married to a Secret Service agent isn't easy."
"I cheated on him multiple times. I'll never, ever forget the look on his face when he found out. I know he felt so betrayed."
Michelle eased back in her chair.
"We don't really have to go into this."
"If you love him, Michelle, make it easy on yourself and just tell him. I saw how he is around you. I know him. I know what he's feeling for you."
"You just saw us together the one time, and it wasn't for long."
"I didn't need long."
Michelle looked down and rubbed a hand through her long hair.
"Thanks for the advice. but you won't take it. I can't make promises, sorry, but you delivered the message really well.
Michelle's phone buzzed. She slipped it out, hoping it was Sean. It wasn't. The name on the caller ID would have gotten anyone's attention. It was the White House. Chapter 74. Sean was sitting across from Sam Wingo. They were in Sean's car, staking out Jenkins' house. "What good will this do?" asked Wingo. "3/4 of what PIs do comes to zip. But you have to go through that to get to the other 25% that actually will result in something. Same sort of deal at the Secret Service. 90% tedium, 10% bedlam. Well, I don't see this resulting in anything more than a waste of time. Are you telling me that when you were soldiering, you didn't have to show patience?" Wingo sighed and shook his head. "Actually, it was 99% tedium and 1% chaos." He looked at Sean. "Sorry, guess my nerves are just running away with me." Sean patted him on the shoulder. "Your son is safe for now. We bought some time. If we can just..." Sean broke off when his phone buzzed. He looked at the screen. "It's Edgar. Maybe he worked his magic with the satellite or found a way to track Grant's car." Edgar, however, had not accomplished either of those things. Yet he did have something else. "I was looking through Jenkins' file and found something that might help you." "What?" asked Sean. "Real estate tax bill for a piece of property other than Jenkins' home." "Where is it?" 10 acres in Rappahannock County, Virginia. I looked it up from an old real estate listing online. It's a cabin, very remote." "Does it have an address?" "I'll email you the directions right now. Good luck." Sean clicked off and filled in Wingo on what Edgar had just told him. "You think it could be where they're holding Tyler and Kathy?" "Rural and isolated. Maybe that's where Grant was when our email flushed him out. It's well over an hour away." "What do we do, go charging in?" "No. We have to do this the right way." He glanced at his phone and then called Michelle. It went straight to voicemail. She might still be at the hospital with Dana, he thought. He punched in another number. A voice came on the line.
"Special Agent Dwayne Littlefield," said the voice.
"Agent Littlefield, it's Sean King.
Did you just drop off the planet or what? My ass is sitting out with the president of the..."
Sean broke in. "I think I might have a lead on Tyler and Kathy."
"Where?"
"There's going to be firepower if the kids are being held there."
"We have people who specialize in this, King. How solid is your info?"
"Won't know until we get there."
"We? No, you let the Bureau handle this."
Sean had the phone on speaker mode, and when Wingo heard this last part, he snatched the phone before Sean could stop him.
"It's my kid, and I'm going to be there. I don't give a shit what you say." "Who the hell is this?" Littlefield paused. "Sam Wingo? Is that you? Do you know how much trouble you're in? And Sean King, harboring a fugitive, obstruction of justice? And I'm not even warmed up yet. Your ass is mine, King."
Sean jerked the phone back from Wingo and gave him a withering look.
"Look, Dwayne,
let's just focus on getting the kids back safe and sound. You do that, I think the president will once more look favorably on the FBI, and then we can work out these other little details."
"Little details?"
"Focus, Dwayne. The kids.
I can send in HRT. They got firepower like nobody else."
"No, we're not going to do it that way. You fight fire with fire. Everybody ends up getting burned."
"Are you trying to tell me how to do my job?" snapped Littlefield.
"The former president's niece was kidnapped. Remember that?"
"Yeah."
"Well, my partner and I were the ones who got her back safe and sound, so we're not exactly thumbsuckers on this. We can help."
"This is way out of protocol."
"This whole damn thing is way out of protocol."
"So how do you want to do this then?" asked Littlefield.
"Me and Wingo,
You and McKinney. We go in fast and with no warning, and we get the kids.
What about your partner, Maxwell? I hear she can kick ass like nobody's business.
I tried to get hold of her, but we need to move fast.
I'd rather go in at night.
And that's right when they would be expecting something. We go in while it's still light. We catch them off guard.
I don't like this.
Sean looked at Wingo. We got a guy here who's special forces. We got you, me, and McKinney. Not one of us is an amateur. These guys have to be running out of manpower by now, so I think the guns on their side might be a little light. We can do this, Dwayne. I'm getting floor plans of the cabin sent to me right now. We'll walk through it, do our recon, and then hit it.
If you're wrong,
then my ass is yours. But for now, we do it my way.
Okay. Tell me where and when.
Sean did, and then put his phone away. Wingo looked over at him.
You as confident as you sound?
Not even close.
Sean put the car in gear and tore off.
Chapter 75. 2 hours later, the skies opened up, and Sean looked to the heavens and thanked the man upstairs. It was a quick thunderstorm, but it was making a lot of racket. It would be over and done in about 30 minutes. The skies would clear to a spectacular cleansed blue, and the winds would calm. But right now, bucketing rain, heavy howling winds, and booms of thunder were covering every sound of their approach to the cabin. He and Wingo had hooked up with agents Littlefield and McKinney. The man from DHS had been even more skeptical than his FBI counterpart, but came around when Sean pointed out the likely scenarios for him. They rescue the kids, they're heroes. If the kids weren't there, then they had Wingo and Sean as an aider and abettor. But as Sean made his way slowly up the hillside to where the cabin stood in its tiny footprint, his gut was screaming at him that the kids were inside its walls. Wingo was on his right flank. They had their guns inside their rain jackets to keep them dry. McKinney and Littlefield were approaching from the other side. Edgar had emailed him the interior floor plans of the cabin that he had dug up somewhere online. It was amazing what the gentle giant could do with his keyboard and a mind filled with more stuff than just about anyone else's. Sean wished they could afford him. There were two rooms in the place of equal size. Sean was pretty sure the kids would be held in the back room, because the front had the only exit door to the place. You didn't put prisoners in a room with a way out. And when Sean grew near enough to the cabin to see the rear window, his deduction was confirmed. There was plywood nailed over it. He looked at Wingo. You see that? Wingo nodded. Problem is, we try and get the boards off, the guards will gun them down. Not if we take care of the guards first. There might be one in the room with the kids. Sean eyed the vehicle parked in front of the cabin. It wasn't Grant's Mercedes, unfortunately.
Four-seater, said Sean. Chances are we have two guards. They have to move the kids. That makes four seats.
Sean had a compact that was wired to units McKinney and Littlefield had. He spoke into his headset.
We're in position.
Roger that for us, too, replied McKinney.
Looks like we got two guards and the hostages in the back room.
We have eyes on it. How do you want to do this?
Sean edged closer to the cabin. What he was trying to get was a direct sight line through one of the front windows. But the storm, while covering their approach, was making a visual pretty hard to come by. He looked back at Wingo and waved him forward. The soldier scampered toward him, seeking cover along the way, just as he no doubt had done in the Middle East. He stopped next to Sean.
What's the plan?
Treat it like combat.
What would you do?
Wingo eyed the surroundings.
Normally, you'd want to draw fire, revealing their position, and then follow up with focused fire or call in an airstrike.
Fresh out of F-16s, my friend. Too bad one of our federal friends didn't bring a thermal imager. We could see where the body heat was arrayed in there. A jagged strip of lightning struck a tree in the distance, severing it in half and setting it on fire. A deafening boom of thunder followed. The split tree toppled to the ground, where the flames were quickly doused by the heavy rains. Sean watched the smoldering tree for a few moments and then looked at Wingo. Here's what we're going to do. Thank you, Mother Nature. Michelle was being escorted to the White House in a black SUV with four Secret Service agents, two of whom she knew.
What's the deal?
She asked one of them as they drove along. The man shrugged. Not my place. The other added, You'll know soon enough. The man will tell you himself. The man was President John Cole, and from the grim expressions of the four agents, Michelle did not think the man was in a particularly good mood. They had made her turn off her phone. No communications, no pictures, no recordings of any kind. She hoped Sean didn't call while she was out of the loop. They pulled into 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and Michelle was taken to the Oval Office. She was told to wait. The president would join her shortly.
Tell him to take his time,
Michelle said to herself as the door closed, leaving her alone. She looked down at her phone. She was itching to turn it back on, but she knew there were eyes on her in here. This was a White House under assault, with leaks coming from somewhere, and it was making them all paranoid. If she tried to get her communications lines back up, they might just make her disappear. Well, maybe not that drastic, but she didn't want to add fuel to what looked like a bonfire in the making. She sighed, sat back, and waited for the most powerful man in the world to walk in and further ruin her day. Edgar Roy's fingers were hammering the keyboards with, even for him, unusual ferociousness. But things were not going well. Edgar had almost never been beaten when hunting down something electronically. People tried to hide things from him, but they never could. He could stare at a wall of screens with information coming in digital packages from the four corners of the earth and make sense of it while just sitting there. His mind was uniquely designed to function at a high level in complete chaos. He could bring order, reason, and results to situations that seemed impervious to any of those things. He had been able to track Grant's Mercedes. That was relatively easy. It was right now parked in a very rural spot, more than 60 miles farther west from the address of the cabin that he had given Sean earlier. He had emailed Sean with the information and then turned to his next task, the satellite. And yet he couldn't find the eye in the sky that Alan Grant had presumably leased. He might have used an alias, of course, or more likely a shell company. Edgar had looked at purely commercial satellites and then government platforms, and now he decided to look at the category in between. Commercial satellites leased to the government. Sean had told him that Grant was mad at the government, so maybe he was trying to get back at it. As he was clicking away, something caught his eye. He hit other keys, his gaze flitting across two screens. To the casual observer, this would be quite a feat. But for Edgar, it was actually a break. He was used to staring at 50 screens at the same time. He thought about the request that Sean had made to track Alan Grant's Mercedes using GPS. He had done that. Police did that all the time. The GPS chip in a car's computer brain made such a task relatively simple. The onboard computer systems in cars these days were extraordinarily complex. Yet since they were tied to other systems, they were vulnerable to hacking, just like Edgar had done. But as the data kept flying over the screen, Edgar Roy got a very concerned look on his face. This couldn't be possible, could it? Chapter 76. Do you smell smoke? The man said. The pair sat in the front room of the cabin. Each sported shoulder holsters. One had been reading a magazine. The other had been playing a video game on his phone. The other man looked up and inhaled.
Yeah, I do.
They each glanced to the window. Lightning struck that tree a little bit ago.
Could be that.
The other man shook his head.
Too far away. And with all the rain coming down, the fire went right out. Not much smoke.
They both rose and looked around.
There, the first man exclaimed.
Smoke was coming through a crack in the wallboard. They both rushed over and examined the area.
I tried to put it out, but I think it's in the walls. Piece of crap place. Maybe the storm caused an electrical short.
He looked anxiously at his companion.
We better move to the backup place. I'll get them.
He raced into the other room and came out a few moments later with a gagged, blindfolded, and bound Tyler and Kathy. Kathy had a bandage around her arm where Alan Grant had shot her. He had done so in a way that the wound was only a crease in her arm. The slug hadn't gone in, but it had burned her skin, bled a lot, and hurt badly.
Let's go, said the man as he pulled them along.
Move it.
His partner was already at the front door. He said,
I'll check in on the way. Let him know what we're doing.
They stepped outside onto the porch and prepared to get very wet running to the car. They would not have to worry about that, because they were never going to make it to the car. A fist crushed the first man's jaw. He toppled as if he'd been clubbed by a grizzly. The second man yelled, let go of the kids, and reached for his gun. When he saw three guns pointed at his head from inches away, he wisely decided to put his hands up instead. Sam Wingo stood over the man he had just knocked out, rubbing his fist. He looked at Sean. That felt really good.
Dad!
Tyler had managed to spit out his gag when he heard the voice. Wingo ran to his son and untied him. Sean did the same for Kathy. She was teary and holding her arm. While Wingo hugged his son, Sean held Kathy.
It's okay, Kathy. Everything's going to be okay now.
She whimpered and said,
he shot me.
Sean looked down at her bandaged arm and then held her tighter. And he's going to pay for that. He's going to pay for a lot. They loaded the kids into the car. Sean doused the small fire he had built using rags, papers, and a bit of gasoline that he'd found in a can behind an old lean-to on the cabin property. Wingo came up to him.
Brilliant tactic, he said.
Sean stamped the last of the fire out and poured some water on it to make sure. Although the rain had left everything wet, he didn't want to take any chances with the cabin really catching on fire.
Any tactic is brilliant as long as it works.
Wingo gripped his shoulder.
Thank you, Sean.
Sean put a hand on Wingo's shoulder.
I know, Sam. I know.
McKinney and Littlefield had the two men cuffed and in their SUV. Sean poked his head in. In a low voice, he said,
I just checked my email. Got a lead on our guy using the GPS in his car. It was parked at an old AM radio station in the middle of nowhere.
Littlefield nodded and pulled out his phone.
Give me the address, and I'll have an HRT team check their ASAP.
Sean did so, and then added, looking at the two prisoners, spill their guts yet?
They want to lawyer up, Littlefield replied, and I don't blame them. Kidnapping, attempted murder, conspiracy to commit a terrorist act.
He said all this in a loud voice that the two prisoners would be sure to hear. He turned to McKinney.
Hey, if we classify them as terrorists or even enemy combatants, do they even have the right to a lawyer?
Sean said, well, I used to practice law. You guys might have had a shot at taking them straight to Gitmo.
I'm an American citizen, yelled one of the men.
Doesn't matter, said McKinney. If you were planning to attack this country, there's precedent.
He smiled at Sean.
This might get really fun.
Maybe, said Sean. But he's still out there.
But we got the kids back, pointed out Littlefield.
I know, and that's the most important thing.
But,
said McKinney,
But kidnapping wasn't the real plan, was it? Alan Grant stared at the computer screen for what would surely be one of the last times. He was inside the vault at the old radio station. The frenetic activity in the other part of the station had ceased. It was empty. He was the only one left. His team had done what they came to do. He looked at the itinerary one last time and confirmed the schedule. He checked his watch. Soon it would be all over. His decades-long nightmare finally laid to rest. He had not escaped unscathed, and he wasn't sure he would be able to avoid a jail cell. But in the end, it would be worth it. His kids would still have their mother. She had plenty of money. They would be okay. Scandalized by what he'd done, but only he could understand truly the justice in all of it. But he felt fortunate in a way. Fortunate that the current president had made the same blunder as his predecessor all those years ago. But for that, this moment might never have come. He called the cabin to check in. There was no answer. He called again. No answer. Slightly panicked now, he downloaded what he needed to his laptop, grabbed his keys, and ran to his car. A semi and accompanying crew would arrive in 20 minutes to undo everything that had been done here, leaving the place scrubbed. He drove to a prearranged spot in D.C. near the Virginia side. He would do what he needed to do from this spot using a remote feature he had built into his plan. From here, he had a nice view of the capital city. Soon, it would be a capital city in chaos. He readied his optics and checked his watch. Nearly there. Edgar had just finished clicking keys, and now he sat back stunned at what he was seeing. It was an electronic back door the likes of which he had never encountered before. He had to marvel at the ingenuity of the people who had done this. They had taken what amounted to electronic DNA fragments from a satellite, once leased by the government, and used that to disguise themselves, almost like a virus or cancer cell, in order to infiltrate another satellite, a very special satellite, that was relegated to one user and one user only. And for a very good reason. Otherwise, something catastrophic could happen. It might already have. Chapter 77.
I'm sorry to keep you waiting, Miss Maxwell. President Cole looked harried and distracted as he entered the Oval Office.
No problem, sir,
Michelle said, quickly rising to her feet.
And Mr. King?
Not here. We split up. You just get me today.
Cole nodded but said nothing. He looked deeply preoccupied.
Bad day, sir?
She said, trying to bring his thoughts back around to this meeting. He started, turned to her, and attempted a smile.
You could say that, but in this job it's all relative. A really bad day is sending off brave young men and women to die for their country.
So I guess a garden variety scandal isn't so bad.
No, but it is distracting. And it gives my political enemies powder for their guns. Not that they seem to need any to fire away at me.
What can I do for you, sir? I know every minute of your day is planned out.
Well, I'm afraid that we're going to have to make this meeting a mobile one. It was then that Michelle fully focused on the fact that Cole was wearing a tuxedo.
Sir?
Formal event in Virginia tonight at Mount Vernon. I'm the keynote speaker. You up for a ride in the Beast? He smiled. My people will give you a lift back. She stood.
Yes, sir.
As she walked out to the waiting motorcade, she slipped her phone out, powered it up, and quickly thumbed in a group text to Sean and Edgar. She hit send, smiled, and put the phone back in her pocket. A Secret Service agent she knew held open the limo door for her. The president always got in last. When his butt hit the seat, the motorcade would leave. Michelle couldn't hide her smile as she climbed inside and took the seat opposite the president, facing backward. As soon as he climbed in,
the door thunked closed, and all outside noise vanished. It would not reappear until the doors opened once more, because the phone book thick windows did not roll down. The motorcade started off. The beast looked like the catty DTS it was on the outside, but it was unique in all other respects. $300,000 allowed some interesting optional features. It weighed more than 8 tons and was completely sealed in case someone tried to hit it with biochemical weapons. The fuel tank was foam-sealed. Even if it got struck, it wouldn't explode. It had an oxygen supply and fire extinguishers in the trunk, along with a supply of the president's blood type. Built into the front bumper were night vision cameras and tear gas cannons. The vehicle's shell was a combination of ceramic, titanium, and the old reliable steel. The tires had a Kevlar skin and were run flat. The doors were as heavy as a large jet's cabin portal because of their 8-inch armor plating. The window's first few layers were bulletproof to absorb around, while the inner layers were a special type of plastic that would catch any bullet like a fly in a web. Two drawbacks were speed and fuel consumption. The beast topped out at 60 miles an hour and got only 8 miles to the gallon because of all the weight. Michelle noted the driver and other agent in the front seat. She then gazed out the window, taking in the 30-vehicle motorcade. Then she looked over the plush interior of the rear compartment. Cole looked at her in slight amusement. "First time in the beast?" he asked. She nodded.
"I left the service before I could rotate to protection detail at the White House."
"I remember my first time. I thought I was in a dream."
"Must feel pretty old hat by now."
"Not a chance. It's an honor and a privilege, and it's pretty damn cool." He settled back in his seat and gazed out the window. "I can never go anywhere on the sly. I'm not even allowed to drive on a public street." Michelle sat back too.
"Probably a good idea. You don't want to have to talk your way out of a speeding ticket."
He smiled and then gazed at the agent in the front. "Window up, Frank," said Cole. The partition glass separating the two sections of the beast slid up. Cole waited for it to finish its glide and then focused on Michelle. "I'm going to speak frankly, Ms. Maxwell."
"Yes, sir."
"My administration is in a world of trouble."
"I sort of got that impression."
"The thing is, we were trying to do something positive, something that would help another country become free."
"The best of intentions, the worst of outcomes."
"My opponents are always screaming at me to send in troops, use America's massive military. But when we actually do something, the effect of which would be the same at far less cost to us, they threaten impeachment."
"I think it's called politics, sir."
"Only this time I think I went too far out on a limb, and it's about to snap." He eyed her with desperation. "Have you and your partner been able to find out anything?"
"We have, sir."
She took him through all that they had learned, including the kidnapping of Tyler Wingo and his friend Kathy.
"My God, I knew nothing about that. And you think Sam Wingo was set up and that this Alan Grant is behind it all? For a political scandal that led to his parents' deaths over 2 decades ago?"
"That's what we believe."
"And he's the source of the leaks to that blogger?"
"We believe that, too."
"And your proof?"
"We're collecting it. In fact, if you let me make a call to my partner, he may have an update."
"Please." Michelle dialed Sean. He answered on the second ring. "I got your text. The beast, huh? With the president?"
"Yes, I am,"
she said happily. "Well, we have great news, too. We got Tyler and Kathy. They're both okay. They're at Fairfax Hospital. Kathy was wounded in the arm, but she'll be okay. They've got heavy FBI security. Her parents are notified and are at the hospital with her."
"Sean, that is fantastic news."
"And we got two of Grant's thugs. Littlefield and McKinney, you're going to put the screws to them. If they talk, we may have a direct line back to Grant."
"Better and better."
She turned to Cole.
"Sir, They got the kids back. They're safe. And they got the kidnappers. The FBI has them in custody. It may lead us directly to Grant.
Thank God, said Cole. That's a miracle. Michelle glanced out the window. They were just heading over Memorial Bridge into Virginia. There were no cars on the road other than the motorcade, because the beast did not share the road with mere mortal cars and drivers. It was a beautiful day now that the rains had passed and the sun shimmered off the frosty surface of the Potomac. So, why are you meeting with the president? Asked Sean. On Michelle's screen, a text from Edgar popped up. Her eyes widened and her gut clenched. Michelle? Said Sean.
Oh, shit.
What is it? Said Cole. Michelle, are you okay? Said Sean. Michelle turned to the president.
We have to get...
She never got a chance to finish. Chapter 78. The steering wheel of the beast was ripped out of the driver's hand and cut a sharp turn to the left. At the same time, the gas pedal hit the floor and the 16,000-pound vehicle accelerated and hit the bridge's stone balustrade at close to its maximum speed. The stone railings were strong, but they were never designed to stop a car that heavy going that fast. The front end of the beast burst through the stone, and its front wheels cleared the pavement. The rear wheels kept spinning, retained their traction, and with another burst of power, the beast cleared the bridge entirely and was suspended in midair for a moment. Then its nose pointed downward, and that was the direction it headed. It hit the water a few seconds later. The rear end came down, and the car settled on the surface of the Potomac. The beast could do many impressive things. Floating was not among them. It quickly sank. Michelle! Sean yelled into the phone. There was no response. He turned to Wingo. Something is very wrong. She's with the president and... His phone buzzed. It was another call coming in. It was Edgar. Edgar, what is going on?
I just texted Michelle, he said. She's with the president.
I know that. She called me. But then something happened. I can't get through to her.
Edgar said nothing.
Edgar, are you there?
When Edgar next spoke, his voice was strained.
Sean, I just got a news break on my screen.
What is it? Sean said, his heart pounding.
The presidential limo just ran off the Memorial Bridge and plunged into the Potomac.
What? How?
That's what I just texted her about.
What are you talking about?
The satellite, Sean. They hacked the satellite that the presidential limo uses for navigation and communication. It's too complicated to explain how they did it.
Okay, they hacked it. So what?
The limo has over 30 million lines of code, Sean. The computers run everything on that vehicle. You hack the brain. Sean finished for him. You control the car, he said dully. Yes. Speed, steering, brakes, everything.
Grant, said Sean, looking at Wingo.
That son of a bitch just got his revenge on a president who had absolutely nothing to do with his parents' deaths. He added in a shaky voice, and Michelle is with him.
Edgar said, what are you going to do?
Sean dropped the phone, punched the gas, and the car flew forward. Wingo had turned the radio on, and they listened to the just-breaking news story. It sounded grim. Rescue operations were quickly being assembled, but they would need heavy equipment to get the car off the bottom of the river. The good news was that the limo had its own oxygen supply and was completely sealed, so no water could get in. Wingo said, the feds will be doing everything they can, and you heard the radio. The vehicle is sealed, and they have oxygen down there. Sean stared straight ahead. First, crashing through the barrier might have unsealed the beast. It's a tank, but even tanks can be damaged. And second? The computer controls everything in the beast, Sam. You own the computer, you own the beast. And Alan Grant is way too smart to have missed something like that. As the limo